Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on DPLEX. The content featured in this episode on video game patents and IP strategy comes from Mara Betanazzi.
Okay, let's talk video games. Not just, you know, playing them, which is great, obviously.
Sure is.
But the sheer scale of the industry, it's huge, culturally massive, and honestly, a real engine for technological innovation.
Absolutely. It's this giant entertainment field, but it's also pushing boundaries, technically.
And beneath all that fun and tech, there's this really complex legal side. Yeah. Especially around intellectual property.
Yeah, that's becoming more and more central. It's not just making the game anymore. It's protecting the clever bits, the innovation that makes it work.
Exactly. And navigating that is what we're diving into today. We're drawing from a blog post by the Intellectual Property Business Academy.
Right. It summarizes an interview from their Intellectual Property Business Talk series. The interview was with Dr. Marta Betanazzi.
And Dr. Betanazzi, she's an Italian intellectual property lawyer, right? An expert in the field.
Yes, a subject matter expert. Knows her stuff on both the law itself and, crucially, modern intellectual property strategy.
And the conversation, the one summarized in the blog post, it really focused on gaming meets intellectual property, specifically this rising tide of patents in the gaming world.
Mm-hmm. Why it's becoming such a, well, a big deal for developers, for investors, even for the lawyers involved.
So our mission really is to unpack those insights. What can you patent in a game? What can't you? Why is it such a, you know, tricky area?
And what do developers, big studios, or small indies need to think about? It's definitely changing. Okay, let's get into it.
So where did Dr. Betanazzi start?
She really set the stage by emphasizing how incredibly rich video games are in terms of intellectual property. They basically use almost every kind of protection available.
Right. The blog post mentions the obvious ones first. Copyright, of course.
Yeah.
That covers the code, the story, the music, the art.
The creative expression, yeah. That's automatic protection. Pretty straightforward in principle.
And trademarks, too. The game title, the studio logo, but also maybe in-game stuff.
Definitely. Think about recognizable symbols within the game, icons, maybe even character names that become distinctive. Those can be trademarked.
Okay. Then there are design rights for graphical user interfaces, maybe.
Exactly. The look and feel of menus, heads-up displays, that kind of thing. And don't forget trade secrets, the stuff you keep locked away, like specific algorithms or maybe the core source code itself.
So lots of layers already. But the conversation and the blog post highlighted that patents are the area seeing a real surge in relevance, especially for technical stuff.
That's the key shift. While copyright and trademarks are established, patents for the underlying tech are becoming much more strategic.
So let's tackle that head on. What actually makes something patentable in a video game? It's obviously not just, I have a cool idea for how players jump.
Huh. No, definitely not. The absolute core principle, as Dr. Betanazzi laid out, is technical innovation. It has to be technical.
And that's fundamentally different from copyright.
Totally different. Copyright protects how you express an idea. The art, the code lines.
Mm.
Patents protect the underlying technical solution to a problem.
And the bar is much higher for patents,
right? Much higher. Your invention needs to be novel new. It needs to be non-obvious, not just a trivial step for someone skilled in the field. And it has to be industrially applicable.
And for games and software, there's that extra hurdle.
Yes. It must solve a technical problem using technical means. You generally can't patent a pure game rule or just a method of doing business within the game. It needs that technical character.
The blog post gave some examples of what might cross that threshold.
Yeah, things like innovative ways to render graphics, making things look better or run faster using a new technique.
Or unique user interface mechanisms, new ways to interact.
Exactly. Novel ways players control things or navigate the game world beyond just standard buttons and menus. Also, algorithms for managing complex online multiplayer stuff, keeping it stable. Smooth.
Sophisticated resource management systems within the game.
Or, you know, technical fixes for common headaches. Like reducing network latency in online games, making physics simulations more realistic, or developing smarter artificial intelligence for characters. That's the kind of territory we're talking about.
And the talk mentioned a specific kind of older example that really clarifies this, that soccer game patent from 2003.
Yes. The one about showing indicators for players who are off screen to help you make passes.
Which sounds a bit like just a gameplay feature, doesn't it?
It does, on the surface.
Yeah.
But the reason it was deemed patentable, particularly under European rules at the time, was that it was seen as a technical solution.
How so?
Because providing that specific visual information about off-screen players directly improved the player's control and visibility. It enhanced the functionality of the game interface through a technical method. It wasn't just a rule. It was a technical means to improve interaction.
That really helps draw the line. Okay, so it's about technical solutions. But you mentioned European rules. The blog post stressed that where you are matters, right?
Hugely. There are significant differences between jurisdictions, especially comparing, say, the European Patent Office, the EPO, and the United States Patent Trademark Office, the USPTO.
And Europe, specifically the EPO, is generally stricter?
Historically, yes. Dr. Bettinazzi pointed out they really hammer on that technical character requirement for software. Pure game rules, no go. Abstract concepts, nope. But if that rule or feature is implemented in a way that solves a genuine technical problem using a technical approach, like that soccer example, then it could be eligible even at the EPO.
And the U.S. approach?
Generally seen as more, let's say, permissive historically. They've often allowed broader protection for software concepts, sometimes including gameplay mechanics, though that's also evolves over time with various court decisions. But the outcome for the same invention could be very different.
Wow. So for anyone making games for a global audience, that's a minefield.
It is. You need a careful strategy. Where do you file? Where might you face infringement risks?
It's complex. And Dr. Bettinazzi apparently made the point that you can't just, like, not release your game somewhere to avoid their patents.
Exactly. Digital platforms are global. If someone holds a patent in, say, the U.S., and your game is available there digitally, you could potentially infringe. It forces you to think about this stuff early during development and understand the rules in key markets.
It makes sense. Global distribution, but fragmented legal rights. Still, you hear that the game industry itself has been maybe hesitant about patents compared to, like, pharma or telecoms.
Yeah, there's a definite cultural aspect there. Dr. Bettinazzi touched on this. Many developers, maybe coming from the more indie or collaborative roots of gaming, see patenting core mechanics as, well, maybe unfair, anti-competitive even.
Like, there's this unwritten rule, maybe, that basic game design ideas should be open, shared, build upon.
Sort of a legacy sentiment, perhaps. Hmm. We shouldn't lock down fundamental ways to play. But that's clashing increasingly with the sheer amount of money involved now.
Right. When studios are investing hundreds of millions.
And they start looking very hard at how to protect that investment. And patents are a tool in that toolbox, whether the older guard likes it or not.
The blog post mentioned a specific flashpoint, Warner Bros. Getting a patent.
Yes, that caused quite a stir. The issue wasn't just, is this legally valid, but the fear it generated in the development community. A chilling effect.
Worrying that if core systems get patented, it'll stifle creativity. People will be afraid to experiment.
Precisely. The fear that developers would have to constantly worry if their new interaction idea steps on someone's patent monopoly. It highlights that tension between protection and openness.
It really does. But okay, despite the controversies, companies are using patents and other intellectual property strategically now. How?
Well, the talk outlined a few approaches that savvy companies are taking.
One was about going beyond the main logo. Secondary trademarking.
Yeah.
And design registration.
Yeah. It's not just the game title. It's registering those distinctive in-game icons, symbols, user interface elements after they become well-known and associated specifically with that game, building brand recognition visually.
Makes sense. And then patent portfolios, mostly for the big players.
Right. Building up a collection of patents. It's expensive, so usually not for small indies. But larger studios use these portfolios defensively. You don't sue us, we won't sue you, or for cross-licensing deals.
Like trading access to technologies.
Exactly. And these portfolios become really valuable assets if the company gets acquired or partners up.
And another big one mentioned was protecting monetization models.
Yes. Think about the complex back-end systems needed for things like microtransactions or maybe sophisticated loot box algorithms or virtual economies.
The tech behind making money in the game.
If there's genuine technical innovation there in how those systems work, that could be patentable. And protecting that is obviously crucial if it's how the game generates revenue.
Okay, that's already complex. But the talk apparently added another layer, user-generated content, open worlds.
Ah, yeah. This is where it gets really fuzzy. We're in an era where players aren't just consuming games, they're creating within them using sophisticated tools.
So the questions raised were, like, if a player uses a game's sandbox tools and builds something genuinely technically innovative, a clever machine, a unique script using in-game logic, who owns the intellectual property in that creation?
It's a huge question. Is it the player? The game developer who provided the tools? The platform?
And what if the developer sees that player creation and says, wow, that's brilliant, we should put that in the next official update?
Do they owe the player anything? Credit? Compensation? Does the game's end user license agreement cover this? Often the law is still catching up to these scenarios. Player interaction is really blurring the lines of authorship and ownership.
Definitely something developers need clearer policies on. Now, shifting slightly, the discussion also touched on moral rights, beyond just the money and patents.
Yes, specifically the right to be identified as the author, the creator.
And the example used was the Hideo Kojima and Konami situation, where his name was allegedly removed from marketing material.
Exactly. It highlighted that even when a company owns the economic rights, the copyright, the patents, the individual creator, might still retain certain moral rights, depending on the country's laws.
Like the right to be named.
The right of attribution, yes. Or the right to object if the work is distorted or mutilated in a way that harms their reputation. It varies a lot by jurisdiction, but it exists.
And it just shows, well, it shows how much personal value creators attach to their work, right? It's not just business.
Absolutely. It's about reputation, legacy, that personal connection. It adds another dimension to the whole intellectual property picture in gaming.
So after wading through all this complexity, the tech, the law, the culture, the user content, we get to the big practical question for developers, especially the smaller ones. Should you actually try and patent your game or parts of it?
Dr. Bitnazzi's perspective, as relayed in the blog post, was very pragmatic. She acknowledged it's tough, it's complex, it costs a lot, especially if you need protection in multiple countries.
That cost factor is huge for indies.
Massive barrier. Mm. But she also stressed that if you do have a genuine technical innovation, something really novel that solves a technical problem, a patent can be incredibly valuable.
How so, beyond just stopping copycats?
Well, stopping others is the main point, giving you market exclusivity for that feature. But also, holding patents can seriously boost your company's valuation. Makes you more attractive to investors, potential publishers, or even acquirers down the line. It's a tangible asset.
So it's a calculated risk, a strategic decision, and the number one piece of advice coming out of that.
Talk to intellectual property professionals. And crucially, do it early in the development process.
Why so early? Before the game's even close to finish?
Because you need to identify what might be patentable before you accidentally disclose it to the public. Showing it at a trade show, putting up a beta, even blogging about the tech in detail.
That could potentially kill your chances of getting a patent by destroying the novelty.
Precisely. An expert can help you spot potential inventions early, advise on whether they meet the criteria, figure out where strategically you should file, and crucially, manage the timing so you don't sabotage yourself with premature disclosure. It's about planning ahead.
Okay. So, wrapping up our deep dive into this blog post on Dr. Bitnazzi's insights, it really paints a picture of a legal landscape in gaming that's, well, evolving fast.
Definitely. As games get more complex technologically, more globally connected, managing intellectual property strategically, including patents for the tech side, is shifting from maybe a nice to have to really a core business necessity.
So for you listening, whether you're that solo dev tinkering with a new mechanic or part of a giant studio building the next big engine understanding this stuff, the patent potential of your technical work, it's not optional anymore. It's essential.
Yeah, and we've seen this ongoing tension, haven't we? Between that traditional game dev culture of openness and sharing and the very real need for companies making huge investments to protect their technical breakthroughs using patents. Plus, the new wrinkles from user-generated content blurring ownership lines.
It leaves us with a big thought. How does the industry strike that balance going forward? Protecting investment versus nurturing the open creativity that fuels innovation. What does that mean for the future of game design and, you know, the place of the individual creator in all of this?
That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah.
How will it all shake out?
This raises an important question.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.